Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, joystick wagglers. We're about to reach the end of Series 1 of Games Master, and we're going to do a special Series 1 wrap-up episode talking about our favourite celebs, challenges, reviews, consultation zones, moments, and many more. But we can't do it without you. So email in your favourite and least favourite moments from Series 1 of Games Master to feedback@underconsultation.com or tweet us at underconsolepod. You can send us an MP3 of your thoughts, or you can call 020-329-0266 and leave a voicemail with your feedback. We'll be playing your thoughts on the show, so get in touch, and you, that's right, you could be featured on our Series 1 wrap-up episode of Under Consultation. Or if you don't want your voice heard, put it down in words on an email or a tweet and we'll read those out too. The only thing we ask is to tell us what your favourite bit of music from this era of gaming is. Right, on with the show. And welcome to our kingdom. This is Under Consultation, an episode-by-episode podcast guide through the UK's greatest video game challenge TV show, Games Master. I am one of your hosts, Luke Owen, a Lancashire hot pot of a podcaster.
And thrilling to the sound of Leather on Willow, I am Ash Versus.
This episode took place on the 3rd of March, 1992. Our number one film at the box office is Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and Shakespeare's Sister's Stay is still number one in the charts.
There's not much more to say about Shakespeare's Sister's Stay.
No. We did say we were going to watch that Graham Norton performance. We still haven't. So maybe we'll do that forever.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Tell you what, let's call it up and then we'll skip ahead to your reactions. So, 3 and a bit minutes change later, you've now watched the Graham Norton performance.
Yes, I have.
50% good.
50% good, yeah. I mean, it's all vowels. Like, there is no consonants in any of that song.
It is the worst game of Countdown you've ever played.
Top comment here on this video that we watched was like, they are 60 and 66 and look and sound great. They sound like they're 60 and 66.
In fairness to them, when we got to the bit where she does the high note, mm-hmm. that's when she suddenly finds her confidence and she actually just like opens the taps,
that's
you
it,
know,
yeah,
and just
completely.
Like puts the taps on full, lets the bath flood over a bit.
Yeah.
She wait, that was a different music video. Never mind.
But she is nervous as hell at the start of that.
Understandable, because, I mean, they only started talking to each other again after the split in like 93. They started talking again in 2018.
Yeah.
Then they toured in 2019, and they are technically still together as an act, mm-hmm. as I checked, like, as of recording.
Yeah, as of recording.
They're not doing anything, but they're also not doing anything.
Yeah.
So technically still together.
Yeah. But you kicked us off with the production history of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, on last week's episodes. Do you want to take us through the next bit?
I can give you a very potted history of the actual production. This movie was made kind of on the cheap. virtually all the major models were recycled. The Enterprise model was a refit of the same model they've been using since the Motionless picture. Mm-hmm. And they literally filled in the cracks and relit it. The Bird of Prey was the same one used in Star Trek IV, the same one they slungshot around the sun. That was heavily damaged because when they did that whole thing of throwing it through the sun to travel in time, they were like, we need to make it look scorched. Let's cover it in like paint mixed with black rubber cement. That'll clean off easily. Spoilers, kids. If you want to do temporary weathering on your Gunpla Gundam kits, don't use black paint mixed with rubber cement because it bonded, particularly under the studio lights. So they had to scour it off. Ooh. But they did a refit of that. All the other models were refits. It was made for $27 million.
It's okay.
Mid-range movie.
For 1992, yeah.
Yeah, but for a movie that was an action movie, sci-fi movie, actually still a moderately low budget. Production went relatively smoothly. There were egos on set, yada, yada, yada.
With William Shatner involved.
To be honest, more than just Shatner.
Yeah, all of them. I was going to say every single one of them, yeah.
You know, DeForest Kelly, Leonard Nimoy, they all had egos, and at that point in their careers, justifiably so. As I think I mentioned before, if you want the full production history, 50-year mission is the tits.
Mark A. Altman's fantastic, fantastic book.
And I heartily recommend the Audible version, purely because you are already going to sacrifice at least 50 hours of your life to those two volumes.
Yeah.
Having someone else read it for you makes it a lot easier.
We're still waiting on that Audible sponsorship as well, I think.
Oh, man. As we discussed a bit about the writing, the plot is the Cold War, yada, yada, yada. Kirk put on trial for an attempted terrorist attack against the Klingons, civil war with the Klingons, goes to a prison planet, shenanigans, bit of a fight, really hilarious scene where he kicks an alien in the knees and discovers that's where the alien's genitals are.
Yeah.
First Star Trek movie I saw at the cinema, and that's the bit that sticks in my head, is an alien with genitals in his knees? Why not?
Why not?
Why not? And the film came out. It came out to very warm reviews. Like, people liked it. In the face of the previous film, The Final Frontier.
Which is bad.
Oh, it's very bad. Not as bad as it could have been, but it's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't actually fight Jesus Christ on the bridge of the Enterprise, which was the original plan.
Yeah.
Critics liked it. Audiences liked it. Depending on who you believe, Gene Roddenberry either did or didn't like it just before he died. He never saw it released in the cinemas, but allegedly saw a cut that was 90% done.
Yeah.
If you believe some people, he gave it a seal of approval. If you believe others, he called his lawyers and asked for 15 minutes of footage to be removed.
Wow.
Mm. The truth actually could be both. As covered in the book, Gene Roddenberry was a complicated individual.
Yeah.
So, budget of $27 million, box office, $96.9 domestic.
Wow, domestic. That's big, man.
That is. It made $20 million on the opening weekend.
Yeah, that's huge. That, like, for 1992 as well, that's big.
Yeah, that means first week it made its budget back.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Star Trek VI?
I love Star Trek VI, man. Wrath of Khan is, you know, tippity-top. Like, Voyage Home is my favorite. Then it's Wrath of Khan, and then it's probably Undiscovered Country. I think it's a great film. I really enjoy it. Of the original run anyway, because once you get, like, I love the Abrams Trek, the first one. I thought it was terrific. Wasn't that keen on Into Darkness, but loved Beyond. Mm. I thought Beyond was absolutely smashing.
I'm with you on the top three of the original crew.
Mm-hmm.
Although, weirdly, even though I would definitely have The Voyage Home as my first, Wrath of Khan as second, and this is a third, I am more likely to watch the first and the third than the second.
Yeah, I think that's fair,
because they're fun. Wrath of Khan is not a fun movie, and also those goddamn worms in the ear just fuck no. Still squicks me out. But no, it was released. They knew it was going to be a success beforehand, and so they were already looking at the cast for a sequel. Shatner, Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, they were like, nah, mate, we're done. We are literally too old for this. Supporting cast, Sulu, Uhura, Chekhov and all that, they were just like, we'd like a go. I was in charge of the Excelsior. Can I have another go round, please? And they realized, though, that they would need to hand the torch over. And then that leads us into Generations, which may well come back to haunt us in the future, because I'm fairly certain it did number one at the box office over here.
I would have thought it did.
It's just whether it coincides with when Games Master was on air.
Yeah.
It's a real Russian roulette, this number one at the box office thing.
Well, there were no big games released in the week that we're covering here in 1992. Is there anything in the magazines?
Yes, indeed there was, because now we are into the March magazines. We say goodbye to the
That's February tomes.
Yes. And at this point, we've got a bit of an about turn on the Super Nintendo.
Have we now?
Because they reveal that actually, our Super Nintendo is going to look like a Super Famicom after all.
Really?
Yes. Now, it was Mean Machines that I think dunked quite heavily on the Japanese Super Famicom.
That's it, yes. They thought it was too kiddie and they thought that the American one was sort of sexy and sleek.
Whereas over in computer and video games, they just say, internally, the machine will be identical to its American and Japanese cousins, except, of course, it will be configured to run on UK PAL titles. But it's going to look pretty much like the classic Super Famicom we know and love.
We know and love.
Of course, like most news articles in CVG and Mean Machines, there is no authors attributed to these news articles.
Mm-hmm.
But the two magazines had about 75% of the same goddamn writing staff.
Yeah.
But maybe that's it. Maybe Mean Machines just didn't like the Famicom as a house style because it was cutesy.
Yeah.
And they were grrr.
That's it, yeah. They the Mega Drive was out. The Mega Drive was this sort of like sleek, sexy thing. You know, it was like just pure black and it with, you know, some sparks of color on there. And the Famicom is almost like the complete opposite to that.
It follows on from the NES and the Famicom of being something that looks fairly comfortable and safe under your television.
Yeah.
Mega Drive is a sports car look. It's dangerous. You don't want to take corners in it. It's just a bit mean looking. There is also a little bit of news in here mentioning that Nintendo reckon they'll be launching a CD drive for the American SNES in 1993. At the ridiculously low price of $199. Nintendo also acknowledged the design changes with their adverts, which now say, it'll be worth its weight in gold and 32,767 other colours. And the controller
is
now the Japanese colourings, but with the American Super Nintendo logo.
We're going to get a big feature on the Super Nintendo in next week's episodes.
Big is a relative term, but yes,
it
will certainly be featured.
Yes.
I have opinions on that already.
they bring back that classic, we're going to look at all the 16-bit consoles. They did it once. They were like, oh yeah, we didn't do that, did we? We'd never do it on our final episode.
I wonder if some was cut for time.
Well, bearing in mind, they'd already sort of done the Mega Drive one because they had that big PR fluff piece where it was sort of about how great the marketing was.
I suppose, yeah, they did Mega Drive. They did do Neo Geo?
Neo Geo was one that was a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they kind of covered all three at that point.
Yeah, to a degree,
but not
yeah.
equally.
No.
The Mega Drive wasn't a great piece. Spoilers, I'm not overly enamored with the Super Nintendo piece either.
Yeah, but we'll get to that next week.
Oh, yes, that is way off in the future.
Hello and thank you. Hello and welcome to Games Master. If it's 6:30 and it's Channel 4, then get ready for the most succulent half hour of the week. If you're not tuned to Channel 4, then I suggest you get your television fixed because you're picking it up somehow. If it's not 6:30, then you are in fact dreaming about me, which is intensely flattering, but doesn't help the ratings.
And this episode kicks off with Dominic Diamond at his organ, tells us that it's 6:30 and it's Channel 4, the most succulent half an hour of the week. However, if you're not tuned into Channel 4, then your aerial has a problem. And if it's not 6:30, then you're dreaming about me, which is flattering, but it doesn't help the ratings.
Depends what sort of ratings you're talking about, really. You know, Britain's most sexy 6:30 p.m. TV presenter probably helps the ratings considerably there.
Yeah.
Coveted title.
As a man who is now in my mid-30s, I got a pop out of, you know, talking about ratings and stuff. It's like, hey, you not watching the show is not helping our ratings in 1992. But I'd imagine when I was 6 years old watching it, being like, what's a rating?
Yeah, I was just like, people review this show? Turns out they do. And it's me. but also made a reference to me being a Lancashire hot pot of a show.
Oh, yes.
Which I thought was a really weird comparison to draw, given what a Lancashire hot pot actually is, which is essentially a stew that was cooked over a very long period of time because everyone was too busy working to actually do in-depth cooking.
Oh, it's bloody lovely, though.
Oh, it's lovely, but it is also made of the scrag ends of lamb and essentially just stewed until it's tender. Now, don't get me wrong, I love a good hot pot, but it's a weird comparison for a show that in many ways has so much attention to detail. The comparison is basically, I'm saying, doesn't hold up because Lancashire Hot Pot was forget about it and just stir it and stop it sticking to the bottom of the pan, whereas Games Master, well, it looks like it was a fairly complicated beast to produce.
I am the son of Scouse parents. So just any reference to Lancashire is just a welcome to my ears, really. And it just makes me think of my mum's cooking of a beautiful pan of Scouse that is just absolutely bloody lovely that I sorely miss as a vegetarian. I'll tell you what, let's head on over to Games Master and find out what our first challenge of the show is, because he tells us the Games Master rules the circuit with a somewhat fluffy rod.
Lovely guy.
Greetings. I am absolutely delighted that you've decided, once again, to pit your skills against one of my little challenges. Let's hope you've got what it takes to be successful. First off this week, I thought we'd have some fun on zany golf. A miniature windmill, telescopic walls, these are just some of the oddities you'll need to negotiate if you're going to win. The person who completes the most holes without running out of shots will be the victor. So keep a steady hand and beware of those yips.
So our first challenge is zany golf for the Amiga, and it's got a lovely little twist on this. It's a father and son challenge, because Adam is going to be taking on his dad, Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, Dominic describes this as a challenge with an Oedipal pent, and I just realised you made a Freddie Mercury rep. I was so focusing on going, how do I say this word? Oedipal? Oedipal?
Yeah, edible.
Edible.
That's like edible. It's an edible. I don't think you get an edible complex.
Dominic Diamond said that it has an Oedipal bent to it, which raises more questions than it answers, because, okay, father-son challenge, but then what does that mean that Adam is thinking about his mother?
I'm pretty sure that Dominic Diamond makes an incest joke.
It's very good to see, the older games player on the show. Who plays the most games in the house, then?
Oh, he does, definitely.
Right, but you still wrestle the joystick off him now and again?
Constantly.
Because he asks if he wrestles the joystick out of his son's hands. And knowing how Dominic Diamond talks of joysticks, that to me feels like an incest joke.
I mean, I see where you're coming from, so to speak.
So to speak.
But I think that may be you reaching a little bit, because I think even Dominic Diamond has some standards. Because also, he seems very sympathetic to Adam, who is absolutely bricking it.
He is so
He's
scared.
Tiny. But yes, you mentioned his dad, Nigel. There's some bold fashion choices going on here.
Now, back in episode one, you said that Tony Wright had a regrettable mustache. Do you want to take that back now and put praise onto that mustache and turn our attention to Nigel's?
No, for two simple reasons, or two people.
Okay.
Mike Hagger.
Yeah.
Ravishing Rick Rude.
Rick Rude gets away with it, and so does Hagar, I suppose. Nigel does not get away with this one.
No, but this is the peak time. If you look, Rick Rude was still going at this point.
Maybe.
Final Fight was out there.
Yeah.
This is a good time to have this. Unfortunately, when you combine it with the sleeveless t-shirt, and man, those jeans have got a high waist.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they're jumpsuit pants almost. It's a very brave choice. Almost like he was at home going, oh, I'm going on this show with my kid. What's fashionable?
I figured he was just a Queen fan. I figured that he was someone who was massively into Queen and wanted to look like his hero.
Now, Adam, how do you fancy your chances against your dad? Who usually wins at the games?
Well, usually it's me, but sometimes my dad can win it. Depends what type of game it is, really.
But you're right about Adam, that he is so, so scared. Like, it's a brilliant interview because Dominic Diamond says, like, you know, who usually wins at home? And he's like, well, usually I do, but it depends on what game we're playing. And I was like, oh, my heart went out for this kid. It was an amazing answer.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, as spoilers, as we find out, I guess one of those games where he doesn't win is Zany Golf.
Yeah.
Which is a game I actually had a copy of.
I was looking up, it got great reviews when it came out across the board.
Confession time, I had a hooky copy of it.
Oh, really?
On the PC, on a 3.5-inch floppy disk. But I loved it because golf games, unless they're getting a bit wacky like Outlaw Golf or Mario Golf, I can take or leave. Crazy golf games, particularly ones which do really ludicrous, I'm all on board for, because there's fun with the physics. There is quite a degree of skill in judging angles and stuff, particularly if you don't necessarily have a guiding dotted line.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And at the time, this game was the second golf game I'd ever owned.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one that was zany, rabbit ears, and actually just a lot of fun. It was an arcadey game, and it was easy to tell what was going on most of the time.
And this does look like it's a pretty fun game, actually. It's got like, it's got 10 holes or so, I think, in the game. We only get two of them here, because the rules are that they've got five strokes each. I see why now Dominic Diamond wanted to do this one.
Five strokes to a finish.
Yeah.
Joining me for even more punishment in the pulpit is Tim Boone from Computer and Video Games Magazine.
Hello,
welcome back, Tim.
Thanks.
Now, what's general tips you could give the players for zany golf?
Oh, well, there's always something going to come at you, give you some trouble. Basically, play like a lunatic.
Tim Boone is in the pulpit for more punishment, as Dominic Diamond puts it, and his only bit of advice is that play like a lunatic.
Absolutely, and this game is a lot of fun to play, and it looks fun. It's not gripping viewing, because to be blunt, neither of these two are actually particularly good at it.
Well, I was going to say, Nigel balls up his first shot something spectacular.
His first two shots.
Yeah.
Adam does pretty well on the first one.
Strength is not his forte on this game. His accuracy is not terrible, but his strength is very, very bad.
Well, there's something that I think we get a bit of in the post-match interview, which is, this is the first time we actually see the setup they're using for playing mouse games.
That's true, actually, yeah.
Where it's a lectern at a 45-degree angle made of wood.
Yeah, he does say that the mouse feels different than it is at home.
I'm not surprised his wrist is up like that.
It's a chunky old mouse as well.
Oh, that is. That's a proper Amiga
that's
mouse.
That's a proper mouse, that.
That is. That's got... That's. That, I hope they clean the lint out before handing that over, because that is in the era when mice still had balls.
You can see that Adam is concentrating so, so hard when he is playing this game.
He's chewing his lip.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's trying his hardest. Bless him. My heart goes out to the kid.
His dad gets the bonus stroke by getting into the windmill. But Adam looks very, very pleased with himself as he wins the first hole, even poking out his tongue at his dad to be like, "Nah, I won."
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting shots of tongues over the last couple of episodes of this season. I have notes. But no, he looks very pleased with himself. And then we're on to the second hole. But by this time, both of them have wasted most of their shots.
Yeah, totally.
Arguably, that first hole should have been two, maybe three strokes done.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, it wasn't. They both faffed it a bit. I think a lot of it for both of them was, again, playing at a 45-degree viewing angle. Because I bet you, if they were rehearsing in the green room, they didn't have the mouse at a 45-degree angle.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough.
And I'm wondering, if he was using the mouse for it, did that also affect the Heimdall challenge?
Oh, right, yeah. We had back in episode 3 or 4, whichever
yeah,
it was.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Because again, especially if you're not used to a mouse, that's going to impact.
Mm. So we get onto our second hole where you've got to bounce off walls. So there's one wall in particular that you've got to try and bounce it off at a 45-degree angle to then get down into the hole. And Adam does miss pretty much all of the walls, but somehow does still manage to get down the slope. Whereas his dad, Nigel, boom, straight, perfect, hits it, nearly gets a hole in one.
If he'd have got that, crowd would have gone ape, because yeah, that would have been pretty spectacular.
But unfortunately, Adam's only got one stroke left, and he misses it, and his dad sinks the putt, and he breathes a sigh of relief that he did not lose to a child on national television.
And that's it. That's the challenge over.
That's it. Challenge over.
Congratulations, Nigel. You struggled at the start, but that was some shot you pulled out of the windmill at the start. That turned the game, didn't it?
Well, I thought I'd lost it, but excellent show through in the end, doesn't it, really?
Well, now, Adam, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I tried to, but the mouse was still a bit funny. It wasn't like when it was at home. Right. Even at home, the mouse button wasn't
so
that good.
On a good day, you think you could give your dad a pasting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you say he didn't lose to a child on television, but you get the two of them stood there for the post-match interview. At that point, the last shot that we saw of Adam sat in the kind of gaming chair, he looked miserable as sin already.
He did not look happy.
He looked tired as well.
Mm.
I mean, they were long shooting days. We talked about the shooting schedule before. So he probably was quite tired. And he just lost to his dad in front of a bunch of jeering teenagers that were all playing hooky from school. And so he stood there, and that's when Dominic asks him and says, you know, what went wrong? And he kind of misses the question, but starts talking about the mouse being funny and the buttons not being right.
That's exactly it, yeah.
And I'm with him on that, because even if the buttons were fine, you're holding the mouse at a weird angle. And then Dominic Diamond, his heart grows three sizes. He pretends to have an earpiece.
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain at no point does he have an earpiece?
Oh, and 100%. And I always wonder, like, if it was started off, like, he made this decision, because when he interviews Nigel, he said, he goes, I thought you'd lost it. And he goes, yeah, I thought I lost it too, but excellence shone through.
And that was the point. That was the point. Oh, you mother
you dick.
And I mean, Adam's dad technically was a motherfucker, I suppose. Yes.
Well, the best golfers win the best prizes, and this is no exception, because the winner here has won a special Games Master golden joystick, and that goes to... Oh, hang on a minute. We've just had a last-minute judge's decision, in fact, and Nigel has been disqualified for being far too old to play video games in the first place. So I'm afraid the golden joystick goes to Adam!
But Dominic Diamond does say, yeah, he gets a message in his earpiece to say that we do have a winner, but it's not Nigel, though. He's been disqualified for being too old to play video games.
This made me laugh, and then I worked out how old Nigel was and how old I am, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Nigel looks genuinely upset that he didn't win.
He does. He's just like, yeah, he looks like he's about to cry. Adam, meanwhile, is just ecstatic. Yeah,
he's lovely.
Because he gets the joystick off Dave the Monk Perry. And
I reckon Nigel definitely asked it for it back. Like, when they got out to the back, he was like, no, but it is mine, though. Like, I did win.
And that's when the monk just appears behind him with a baseball bat, shaking his head. Yeah. No.
When they get home and they put it up on that mantelpiece, he's telling all of his friends that it is his.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I asked them to refilm the ending just for his sake. Yeah. It was a bit cheesy, but you know what? It was actually kind of a fun moment. And yeah. I'm sure as a kid, I appreciated the whole you're too old to be playing video games. As someone that is now technically, by that standard, too old to be playing video games. Fuck you.
The theme for this week is sports games. First up on the Mega Drive, experience some awesome gridiron action in John Madden 92.
Touchdown! John Madden 91 really was the best sports simulation for me of last year. Well, John Madden 92 looks like being the best for this year. It's taken all the basics, the great graphics, the great sound effects of the first game, and made them even better. Instant replay is a must. Check it out.
It's similar to John Madden 91, but it's got a bit more of a sense of humour, and like the ambulance comes on if a player's injured and practically runs over the whole team.
Excellent. Lots of things to do. Brilliant in two players. Excellent in one player. Get it now.
So our theme for the reviews this week is sports games to spend your pennies on.
Bollocks.
We've got Chris Kelly, Harry Hewland, and Paul Rand from CVG, our only journalist in the bunch this week. And up first is John Madden 92 for the Mega Drive.
John Madden 92, or rather John Madden in general, I think was one of the first games to become what is now the annual series. It was also an EA title, but the idea that there would be one every single year with, for the most part, nominal increases. Little bits of improvements along the way, but the first one was 1989, and they've just released the 30th one this year. So it's going for 30 years, still with John Madden sponsorship. And from 1994's, they actually had NFL licensing, because up until 94, it was John Madden. So they had his name and his face and his voice. All the teams and all the players were completely fictional. Not that most of us in the UK would know, really.
No, absolutely not. Because that was Sega's big thing. Like, when they first started and they were trying to compete against Nintendo, they were trying to do it through celebrity likenesses. That's why they got Michael Jackson's Moonwalker, and they got the boxing game with... I can't remember who the boxer was now, but they signed him on because he was on a big undefeated streak. And then the day before they launched it, he got knocked out and made a fool of on TV. And they thought, oh dear, this game might not sell well now. But John Madden was again one of those things where they were like, we're selling it on the celebrity name as well as the cool game. Like, yeah, Nintendo's got this massive library, but we've got Spider-Man, and we've got Ghostbusters, and we've got John Madden, we've got Michael Jackson.
And Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also an amazing... That's the thing, at that point, Nintendo weren't kings of the arcade. They were in the early 80s. They obviously had Donkey Kong, they had Mario to a degree, but they had some great games. But some of the arcade ports that were coming to the Mega Drive as well, like Golden Axe, Outrun.
This game got massive reviews as well. Megatech gave it 95% and a Hyper Game Award, saying you'll enjoy it even if you don't care much for the sport. And in October 1992, the magazine Mega placed it at number one in their top Mega Drive games of all time.
I wish I liked this game. I want to, because I see people playing it and I see people talking about it with such reverence and love. And I'm like, I wish I got it. I don't look at this game and fail to understand what people find appealing about it. I see what people love about them.
Yeah.
There is, as is mentioned in this review, there's bits of humor when the ambulance comes on and it's fast paced and it goes. And if you know the sport, then you can really take advantage of it and you can really get in depth. So I can see everything that people love about it. And I wish I did.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, man.
I want, maybe I'll go back and revisit it under emulation off the back of this. And maybe I will pick up this John Madden 92 and I'll go, yes, I get it now. But chances are slim.
Well, Chris Kelly said that Madden 91 was the best sports simulation last year. 92 will be the best this year. Took all the basics and made them better. Harry says the game's got a great sense of humor, as you mentioned there. And Rand just says it's brilliant all round. It's 95%.
Stonker of
that,
a score.
That's our highest review score we've had thus far. That beats out Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, which I think was our highest one, our previous highest.
One last little fun fact about John Madden is that the 94 version was also the first game in the series to feature the classic EA Sports
in the game.
Yeah, that was where it began.
It was when I was at university, it was EA Sports. They're all the same.
Whereas now it's EA Sports. It's in the microtransactions that will bankrupt you. Yeah, I'm not letting that one go.
Topical.
Topical. Best thing is, people could be listening to this in the year 2022. It will still be relevant unless some serious international law changes, in which case, I'm happy to be wrong.
Next up on the Game Boy, one-on-one action as you rim and slam dunk with the best of them in NBA All-Star Basketball.
All the characters from the NBA are there. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Patrick Ewing. You sport for choice, really. And it really is good value.
All-Star Basketball could be a good game for you if you like one-on-one. But if you're looking for a normal game of basketball with two teams, then it's not worth it.
It's not basketball, it's one-on-one, run about, run up to the basket, throw the ball, and that's it.
Up next, we've got NBA All-Star Basketball for the Game Boy, rim and slam dunk with the best of them, says Dominic Diamonds.
High point of filth for this season, I think. A rimming joke, you're not going to get much filthier than that.
No. Kelly says that all of the characters from the NBA are all here.
Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Bill Murray.
He said it's good value, but Harry points out that it's only really good for one. It's not an actual NBA game. It's not a basketball game. It's just one-on-one playing hoops.
It's not even NBA Jam.
Yeah. It's a few years later, isn't it?
Yeah, it's accessible. By making it one-on-one, so it is just you have a very simplified rule set to go against, it does make life a lot easier.
It's perfect for the Game Boy.
It's perfect for the Game Boy. But no, I think calling it All-Star Basketball is reaching a lot.
Yeah.
Just like NBA Jam at no point says, this is basketball. It says it's NBA Jam.
Yeah, but it scores 69%.
Nice.
Finally, on the Amiga, thrill to the sound of leather on willow and the feel of a googly or two in Graham Gooch Cricket.
I'm a big cricket fan and I like the idea of a cricket simulation, but somehow I don't think Graham Gooch Cricket really does the sport full justice.
From what I've seen, it's just stand in the middle of the pitch, wiggle the joystick or the mouse, and hope for the best. Not what I'd call demanding.
And lastly, thrill to the sound of leather on willow and feel a googly or two with Graham Gooch Cricket on the Amiga.
Basically bobbins. 60% done.
Yeah, done.
That's
it.
And it's a shame because the game actually looks quite nice.
Graphics are great.
That's because they don't need to do much.
No. That's true.
It is very static and very long-winded.
Yeah.
Cricket as a sport is something I wish I understood. The video games haven't helped.
No. Well, Rand says that you just wiggle the joystick and hope for the best. It's not demanding. As he said, 60%. Oof. Ouch.
And finally, it's time to announce the winners of our Games Master Golden Goals competition on Kickoff 2. We were completely swamped with entries from all you out there who have scored in more spectacular fashion than I have in the past. We picked out what we considered to be the three best, and here they are in reverse order. In third place, Simon Reynolds from Harlow. A lovely long deep ball from midfield finds Arnold on the left. He takes it steadily into the middle and unleashes a left foot rocket into the corner of the net. In second place, Ian Hollenby from North London. Butch Agüero picks up a through ball, dribbles past one player, sends the goalie the wrong way and the crowd into rapture. But the winner, who will receive two tickets to the Rumbleos Cup final with a delightful move from his own penalty area, is Robert Moss from Hertfordshire. Teasing Toshack shows one side of the ball, then the other, sends the defence into disarray and drills the ball home with a deadly display of finishing. Well done, Robert.
And lastly, it's the Kickoff 2 competition.
Yeah.
Which I think they've mentioned once or twice, and maybe it was cut out of the versions we saw which had all the adverts trimmed out of. But I'm not sure where all these entrants came from. I'm almost willing to claim a rig job on this.
Yeah, we had it once on the episodes that we have seen. They've not mentioned it again since. So I'm willing to bet that it was just mentioned once and then they brought it back. And I thought they would do it on the final episode as a way to sort of like round up the series.
Yeah, maybe they wanted to end on the, as we mentioned, the Super Nintendo, because that was going to be the most current bit of news they could end on. But also I'm looking at this going, okay, as a kid, I'm fairly certain I recorded some video games to VHS. These all look remarkably clean and like they were put through some professional grade capture.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I'd happy to be wrong, but I will say that the goals were very high quality. These were football games. These were the style of football games I like. I like Kickoff. I like sensible soccer. I can still play a more accurate football simulation now, but I do like a bit of arcade footy.
Yeah, totally.
Especially multiplayer.
Yeah.
You put me against a computer, I'll get bored very easily. Me and you were to sit down and play some sensible soccer, bants.
Hours of...
Bants for hours.
Bants, yeah. Crash Bandicoot all day long. Simon Reynolds from Harlow Gaming. Thank you. So in third, we have Simon Reynolds from Harlow, which is a name that I just recognised. I almost felt like we'd had him as a contestant before. I haven't gone back to check, but I don't think he is. It's just like... I just almost feel like I've heard that name said on this show before. And he hits a long ball to the forward who just smacks it right into the back of the net. Ian Holloway from North London dribbles the ball through the whole team to get his goal. But in first place, it's Robert Moss from Hertfordshire, who won tickets to the Rumbleos Cup. And he dribbles from his own penalty box and scores. It's actually a really good goal.
It was a really good goal. But do you know what the most amazing thing about this entire competition was?
What's that?
Rumbleos. Names I hadn't thought of.
Well, let's head on over to Gamesmaster to find out what our celebrity challenge is for this week's episodes.
Hello again. For the second challenge this week, I thought we might take the liberty of indulging in a spot of boxing. The game I've chosen is Final Blow. And your task, dare I say it, is simply to pummel your opponent into submission as quickly as possible. Character building stuff indeed. So keep your guard up, keep your punches high, and may the best man win.
We are playing Final Blow Boxing with the very simple instruction, pummel your opponent into submission.
It's a fairly simple instruction. It's also fairly accurate for most arcade boxers. The boxer in question, Final Blow, was originally an arcade game by Taito.
Mm-hmm.
Taito. Taito.
Yeah.
Taito.
Let's call the whole thing up. I had a conversation with an old Japanese man when I was out in Japan. We were down Piss Alley in Shinjuku. I think it was in Shinjuku.
Is it called Piss Alley because it smells of piss?
No, it's just because like there's lots of bars and stuff. My wife and I were there and we were having some food and I was there using my chopsticks. And this old Japanese man sort of tapped me on the shoulder to ask me in very broken English where I learned to use chopsticks because I'm really good. And so all of a sudden, I'm like, voice of it. I'm like, hello, mate. Absolutely. So I explained back to him that, you know, in England, when you go to Chinese restaurants and stuff, they just give you chopsticks. So I was self-taught. And then he was showing me how to hold them. And it was at that point then I realized he was telling me off because I was not respecting chopsticks. I was just picking them up very rudely. And so he was correcting me on how to do that. It was my manners were very bad. But I had a conversation with him because he lived in Taito. And he was explaining to us, like in very broken English, about how it's pronunciations of certain words. We were very bad. We were very British. We were running letters. Whereas in Japan, it is like Taito, which is why at the start of their games, when like you play Buster Move, is Taito.
Mm.
Rather than saying Taito, it is Taito.
Okay.
It's all about the enunciation. Now, so you just saying that then just completely reminded me of that because I knew that's how it's pronounced.
It's a great anecdote. And just curious, out of this entire experience with this old Japanese man, did you still have your wallet at the end?
I did, yes.
Because I don't know why, but maybe it's just my incredible cynicism, was I was just thinking that while he was lecturing you on chopsticks, his hand was just going, wallet, phone.
I mean, even if he did, there was Naus in there. He'd have been very disappointed.
Maybe he put it back. Put a couple of hundred yen in and just like, I'm putting that back. This is embarrassing.
Poor lad.
But... outside the US, the game gained some branding from Buster Douglas.
Yes, Buster Douglas, that's who I was thinking of earlier.
I know, I kind of let you out to dangle because I knew we'd come back to it, because that's when Sega got big in on that, because he just defeated Mike Tyson.
That's the one.
Who was on Punch-Out.
Yes.
And so Sega used it as part of their Sega Do What Nintendo Don't campaign.
Yes, that's it.
Blind of a move, though. And the only real issue with it is that actually the game featured in multiple top 10 worst Mega Drive games of all time.
Yeah.
I will say it looks good.
Oh yeah, the graphics are super cool.
The graphics look beautiful. I was particularly enamored with the backlit audience, mm-hmm. the way they did that to make the audience look super big and deep, but actually minimizing the amount of colors that needed to be used by having them just in silhouette.
Yeah.
And the sprites look nice and big and chunky, and the referee was always moving backwards and forwards and checking. The blows sounded really heavy
chunky
and weighty. Yeah, I can only assume that it played terribly.
Well, I mean, this looked like you just twat buttons and hope that your lad goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's what it looked like here. And it just felt like the two people we got playing this game, that just felt like that's what they were doing.
I'm fairly certain on at least one of the shots of them playing, Barry wasn't even holding the joystick. He was just twatting the buttons and the joystick was just standing free and proud.
Yes, so to speak.
So to speak. One of the joysticks in use in during these last couple of episodes was bright pink. I can't imagine it to be an accident.
So you mentioned Barry there. That is our celebrity this week. It is British and European, or former British and European featherweight champion, the Clone Cyclone, Barry McGuigan, taking on Gary Wilson from Aldershots.
Barry McGuigan, no stranger to video games in theory, because he had Barry McGuigan's World Championship Boxing, which, unlike this game, was very well received. It was a classic. I had it on the Amstrad, and even on the limited capacity of that, it was a cracking boxing game.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't bust that out, really.
I think it was slightly older at that point.
Even so, like, you know, there's some games that we've had on this where they, you know, they originally came out in 88 before got ported in like 1990.
This raises an interesting question, which I don't think we've considered before. Did they have free reign on what games they could use, or did they have to get permission to license them?
Yeah.
Because this is pre-streaming. Nowadays, within reasons of most copyright, you can stream whatever you want on Twitch or YouTube. Replays might be an issue if they contain licensed music, but for the most part, you've got free reign. But back then, what were the rules? Because they were, by virtue of being on a commercial television station, monetizing mm-hmm. someone else's intellectual property,
yeah.
which is where we had issues a year or so ago with Nintendo and streamers, because they were taking exception to people doing YouTube videos and streams or saved streams of their videos because of the monetization.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the embarrassment of, like, we got Barry McGuigan on, goes to publishers, can we use Barry McGuigan's boxing? No. Final blow it is then, okay.
It's the Buster Douglas game, I guess. So Barry made it into the final 16 of the 1980 Russian Olympics as an amateur, won British and European titles in 82. There was an Irish ballad released by Big Tom about him in 1984 that was called Clone Cyclones.
Ah.
He was voted BBC Sports Personality of the Year in 1985, retired in 87 after the passing of his father, but returned for a couple of fights in 88 and 89. Looked at his record, 35 fights, 32 wins, 28 by knockout, and only 3 losses.
That's pretty damn incredible. And the thing that I also take away about him, seems like a really lovely bloke.
Yeah, he's
salt of the
this.
Earth,
yeah.
Pint down the pub,
yeah.
Cup of tea. You know, he'd hold the door open. It would be nice. I just warmed to him immediately.
Totally, absolutely.
And also I used to see him on Question of Sport quite often as well. Wasn't a fan of Question of Sport, but I'd catch either the beginning or the end, depending on what was on afterwards. Red Dwarf,
yeah.
Usually on BBC Two.
Lastly on Barry, he was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame and the World Boxing Hall of Fame, both in 2005. So, an incredible career this man has had, but he cannot match up to Gary's lovely sweater.
I was going to say, there's some amazing fashion choices on display. Gary has a lovely cable knit jumper on it. It's chunky. It just looks comfortable and needed in that church, which apparently was pretty bloody cold.
Oh, yeah.
Which does make Nigel's sleeveless shirt earlier an even bolder choice.
It's a bold decision.
Yeah. Maybe you're thinking, oh, I'm going to be in a TV studio. I'll be sweating my balls off.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely not.
No. So, yeah, he has the cable knit. Barry has what looks to be some kind of satin jacket.
Yeah.
I tell you what, if those two tussled in the car park, sparks would fly.
Yes. Very good.
It's no Crash Bandicoot, but I'll take what I can.
Now, Gary, if I could turn to you first, how confident are you for this fight? Have you been training hard?
Yeah, I'm quite confident. I've been training really hard, you know, up at 6 every morning, taking the steroids every day.
Okay, well, let's see what your opponent has to say. It is Gary. Barry, you're a bit of a games player yourself, aren't you?
I'm a bit of a pretender. I think Gary here is a bit of an expert, but I've had this game for a while and I've tried to get a Sega. My son's got a Sega at home and we've been playing it together. Unfortunately, he's been knocking me out all the time.
Okay, well, let's have a good clean fight and come out boxing.
Dominic Diamond, in this era where they weren't doing retakes, calls Barry Gary.
Hey, well, they did multiple shots of some of the challenges, but a word.
Yeah, I know. It's unfair as well, getting Barry versus Gary. Of course, Dominic was going to slip up at one point.
I mean, they could have been a great double act a la Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah. Barry's also got a lovely tash, actually. And he says that he and his son have been playing this game at home, but his son keeps winning, which does not inspire a lot of confidence in Barry McGuigan playing this game.
I'd say, or maybe he was trying to be a ringer, but knowing where the challenge goes, no.
Yeah.
Well, we can taste the tension here at ringside. Will the young pretender from Aldershot tame the Clonus Cyclone? For this and many other brutal climaxes, please join us after the break.
Good morning.
Morning.
Look, about last night.
You don't have to explain.
Laura's just an old friend.
I understand.
I'll call you.
Sure.
Excellent coffee.
Thank you.
And the intriguing presentation. Perhaps we might discuss it over dinner.
Golden roasted, richer, smoother. Nescafe Gold Blend.
Are you happy about the meeting?
Sorry, he rang again for the fifth time.
Problems?
No, just an old friend.
Isn't it typical? You get stuck into your favourite Sega games on your Amstrad Mega PC, speakers blasting out in Sega stereo and...
Sorry, son, I need to use the PC. I've got work to do.
So he uses a 386 SX computer running at 25 megahertz for word processing, database, spreadsheets. What a waste of 40 megabytes of hard drive. The new Amstrad Mega PC, just £999.99. Brilliant for business, mega for games.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Entertaining can sometimes be a drag. That's why I insisted on a new gas built-in oven.
Okay, Jonathan, pizzas are ready.
It's got a ceramic grill, which means you have a large area to cook with. On the outside, it stays cool, and on the inside, it helps clean itself. Unlike this lot. But the best thing is, it has a fan-assisted oven, which gives it an even temperature throughout. Don't you just love being in control?
Welcome back to Games Master.
If you've just joined us, the tension here is intense as young Gary Wilson from Aldershot attempts to take on the might of Barry McGuigan in a fearsome boxing contest.
We've got Tom Watson from Renegade in the pulpit. Watson calls this an all-action game, and this is all action. This is just punch, 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 punch. Very little blocking. Some of them go down, some of them stand up, some of them punch, some of them fall down. Yeah, Gary won, I think is the what we're trying to get to here. They do make it through the first round, but it was quite clear that this was not going to go much longer than this second round.
No, McGuigan did get an early knockdown.
Mm.
He did decisively twat him in the face and the kid went down and that was it. That was done.
My favourite thing about this is Barry is counting along at the end and I think that he thinks he's winning. And I think he is counting the victory, not realizing that his character is on the floor.
See, I thought he was counting because he was just like, well, that's it. Not realizing that actually you can hammer the shit out of the buttons to try and get back up. I'm actually assuming you can because that's pretty much how every single boxing, wrestling, MMA, whatever the hell type game works. You get knocked down, you waggle your joystick, you thumb your buttons, mm-hmm. you try and get back to your knees.
Yeah, this is why I suck at the current WWE 2K games. None of that larky going on anymore.
Well, also the games are terrible.
Well, there's that as well, yeah.
Congratulations, Gary. We in the commentary box thought you were out of the fight. You were knocked down very, very early, but somehow you managed to pull back.
Yeah, I thought I was out too, but, you know, basically I thought, got to go down with the fight, so jumped in, the old fire buttons blazing and come out on top.
Congratulations to the loser now. Barry, like we say, we thought it had gone the way of most of your fights. You had the measure of your man from the start, but then it slipped away.
I thought I had him in the first round there. I had him down. I got a bit overconfident and I got cocky and I got caught. Bang, the fight was over.
Gary thought that he was out of the game at one point, but if he was going down, get the fire button blazing. Dominic Diamond says that Barry had the measure of his man, but just got caught out. And Barry, I love this, is where he just goes like, I got overconfident after that first round.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really fun interview, a really fun post-match interview.
You can tell which of the sporting celebrities were used to being on the pundit circuit.
Yeah.
Annabelle Croft is obviously the celebrity guest of this entire season.
Completely. She has set a high bar.
I'd say Barry is actually probably tying second with the Fash.
Mm, yeah, I think actually, yeah. Fash was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Fash was also good at walking the walk and talking the talk.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is that all three of those set the bar so high that when the bar was low,
mm-hmm.
Mason, unfortunate.
It was a very simple challenge. Dominic Diamond calls the joystick the gaming Oscar. I thought it was all right. It was perfectly fine stuff.
I did like that as Gary was getting the joystick and waving it around, Barry tried a bit of banter or business or something with the monk, and the monk was like, "Fuck it," and walked off. He did. He just, as the monk turned around, Barry went to do something with the monk, and the monk just kept going, and Barry turns around and goes, "Oh, I don't know then." Thought I was having a bit of fun. Turns out I've upset a monk.
Hello, Games Master.
Welcome to my kingdom.
In Metal Gear, I keep getting lost in the maze zones. Is there an easy way out?
Mazes. I'm rather partial to a maze or two. You simply need to explore, young man, then memorize the correct route. If I remember correctly, now let me see. Left. Left. Up, then left, will enable you to get through this particular maze zone and progress to the following buildings.
Thank you very much.
Well, please don't get lost.
Right into the consultation zone we go, and our first chap is lost in the maze zone of Metal Gear. What he's talking about is the jungle at the start of the game, which you go left, left, up, and left, and that will get you out of this maze.
It is a bastard of a maze, though.
Well, yeah, and it's not meant to be there either. I swear the most interesting thing about this is because this was a game that was made for the MSX2 out in Japan, and then they wanted to do a port of it over onto the Nintendo, and apparently, well, according to Kojima, the port was developed by another Konami division, and they were given the source code without his permission. And I don't think they had the consent of the original team.
No,
or
they
something.
Did not. No, yeah. This is like when Kojima airs his dirty laundry, he really goes for it. And yeah, he's still very bitter about this, I think.
Oh, totally. This feels like the Yuji Naka situation in Sega, which we get a couple of years later, when they took his Knights engine to try and make the 3D Sonic game. And he was very, very upset about that. But many changes were made during the porting process, which is why we've got this bit at the start. This isn't meant to be the start of the game in the jungle where they parachute in. It's an underwater infiltration, I think, at the start of the game instead.
Yeah, but it was one of two directives the porting team had, was one, make it as different to the original as possible, which is like, we've got this really great game, make it different.
Yeah.
And the other, 3 months. 3 month deadline to do this entire port, and also have to deal with limitations of the NES and the mapping engine, which is why the big boss at the end is no longer a big boss, it's a computer.
Yes. Yeah, Metal Gear's not even in the game.
Yeah. What is Metal Gear? We just don't know.
We just don't know. Yeah, Kojima's completely disowned that game. And quite rightly so, the NES port's not that great.
The really fun bit of trivia comes that we did get a MS-DOS and Commodore 64 port, which now you'd think, well, the obvious source for the port would be the MSX2 version, yeah?
Yeah?
No. Because it was never localized, the Western home computer versions were ported from the NES. What an absolute shower. We really should have guessed what was going to happen to Konami down the line, given those sort of antics. Now it's Pachinko, and that's about it.
Hello, Games Master.
Hello to you, young man.
In Mega Man 2, I'm having real trouble killing Dr. Wily in his alien form. Can you help me?
Yes, I'm sure I can. Quite obviously, dear boy, you're not using the bubble lead. Only by using the bubble lead can you dispose of Dr. Wily when he's in the alien form.
All right, I'll try that. Thanks.
Our second chap is stuck on killing Dr. Wily in his alien form in Mega Man 2. Use the bubble weapon, mate, to kill Dr. Wily, as Games Master says, because he is just reading off a prompter of what he needs to say. He sees that one is like, ah, Dr. Wily, I see.
You say Wily, I say Wily. Let's call the whole thing off. I'm not surprised he needs help, because as we previously documented, defeating a Mega Man game without insistence is just impossible.
So difficult.
Yes, Adam, I saw your tweet, even for you.
Hello, Games Master. I always get killed by the blue lobster whenever I play The Revenge of Shinobi. How can I kill him?
Well, you need to show a little initiative, young man. When you enter the chamber, jump onto the left-hand wall. Then, as he attacks and lowers his sword, you need to jump, somersault, and shoot. If you repeat this procedure a number of times, you will overcome this villainous shellfish.
Thank you very much.
Well, you will find it really does have results.
And our third and final lad was my favourite this week, who keeps getting killed by the blue lobster in Revenge of Shinobi. And then he goes, how can I kill him? Really made me laugh.
It was great. And the thing is when I first saw this, I was just like, why is he calling him a blue lobster? And it's because in the game, he is actually a blue lobster. Yeah. It's like, that is what he's called.
Yeah.
Revenge of Shinobi is such a good game.
It's an amazing game. Oh, it's so, so good. I had it because it was part of Mega Games 2, I think, which had Revenge of Shinobi, Streets of Rage, and Golden Axe, I think, as like a trilogy of games in one cart. That's a great cart to get your hands on when you're 7 years old. And Revenge of Shinobi, going through, getting unlimited shurikens, which is the only cheat that I can still remember to this day.
What is it?
You go to the menu, you go down to the shuriken number, and I think you hold down A and hold down left. You set it to zero, and then you hold down A, and I think you hold down left, and then the two zeros can join together to make the infinity symbol.
Oh, that's smooth. That's nice.
Nice little sound effect with it as well.
See, I love this game, but I love it sometimes for all the wrong reasons. Are you aware of how many different versions of this game there are?
Oh, there are so many different versions. Batman, we've got Godzilla, yeah. We've got Spider-Man.
My favourite thing about all these different versions is the reason why they exist is because the game's designer essentially went, yes, because I ran out of ideas, I did some sketches based on what other things I was looking at. Turns out the designer just saw them, didn't think to change them, took it literally. So we have 4 versions of Shinobi. The first one, 1989, version 1, there were enemy characters. One that looked like Rambo, mm-hmm. who was called Rocky.
Yeah. There you go.
Why not? One that looked like Jackie Chan, a version of the Terminator called Hercules.
Which might be a reference to Hercules in New York.
There was Spider-Man, who halfway through the battle turned into Batman.
That's right.
And something called Monster G that I can't possibly guess could be a reference to. But both Spider-Man and Batman are actually fake representations conducted by a shapeshifter. So I guess let that one slide. Then there was version 1.01, which is where the fake Spider-Man was actually the licensed Spider-Man, because they got the license for Marvel Comics. And they didn't have the license for Batman, so he turned into kind of almost like a devil man mm-hmm. kind of creature. And they changed a couple of other enemies, including removing the likeness to Rambo, despite the fact that Sega did hold
the Rambo license.
Yeah.
Because they released Rambo 3.
Then there was version 102, which was mostly the same, but included a copyright notice to acknowledge Marvel.
Yeah.
Then there was version 103, which was the penultimate version, where Monster G stopped looking like some other Japanese lizard and became a skeletal dinosaur. And then version 104, which was released for the emulation market and the Wii marketplace in 2009 and 2012. They redesigned Spider-Man. They changed all the other licensed stuff. They did a palette swap. I think he's pink or purple or something. Yeah. And they essentially made it as lawsuit friendly as possible.
Wicked game, though.
Oh, it's a blind of a game.
I felt like Billy Big Balls as well here, because when this guy is going, how do I kill him? I already knew the answer. Get up on top, jump up and do your little somersault move, and you throw out the shurikens, which is why getting unlimited shurikens is good, because you're throwing out like six in one go. Mm. Just keep doing that when he throws his sword down.
See, if this game had been released like a good 10, 15 years later, he'd know, because he'd have seen Revenge of the Sith, and so would have known you always have to have the higher ground. Anakin clearly never played this game.
Now for our final challenge, let's see what Games Master has planned.
Ninja warriors have been conspicuous by their absence from the programs to date, so I've decided to put that right with Shadow Dancer. Your task is to guide the warrior and his faithful hound through the second and third levels of burning downtown Brooklyn in 2.5 minutes without losing life. You will need to rescue all 11 hostages before destroying the reptilian end of level guardian. So keep your wits about you and don't trust anybody.
Yeah, he thinks that we've not had enough ninja warriors on this show, so we're amending that with Shadow Dancer for the Mega Drive. An amazing game.
He says they're conspicuous by their absence. Of course they are. They're sodding ninjas. You can't see them. Even if you are a giant mechanoid Patrick Moore, they're still ninjas.
Yeah, so our challenger has got to get through the first level without dying, and you've got to beat the end of level Guardian 2. And our challenger is a very unique one. He is someone who has never played this game before, which I don't believe. And
I read that as never played this game before today.
Well, he said, yeah, he's never played this game. Yeah, perhaps. Because I was thinking as well, like, never playing this game before. Isn't that uncommon on Games Master? We've had a lot of people say, I've not played this game a lot, or a lot of the celebrities have said they've never played it.
I mean, if he'd played some of the previous Shinobi games, he would probably still be pretty good. Him not playing it before would also explain why he doesn't make much use of the dock.
Perhaps, yeah.
He seems to use it once by accident, because it's triggered by holding down a fire button.
Yeah.
And I'd have been using that dog way more. You know, there's a whole bit where he jumped back and forth to deal with enemies where he could have just sicked the dog in there and it would have been a run through. It would have been a lot quicker, actually. So
yeah.
maybe he hadn't played it much.
I was going to say, I think playing it much, I think, is probably a good way to put it. Because watching him play this, the reason why I thought that he had played this before is he knew to walk forward and then walk back to avoid the falling rocks. Whereas I think, because it's a one-hit game as well. Like, you get hit once and you're dead. I think if you had played this game before, you would just keep walking and get hit by those rocks.
I'd love it if it had been a pure blind blaze playthrough and he just walked forward, boom, dead, done. Yeah. Challenge over, good night.
Or it could be a Big Boy Barry situation where he did that and they were like, I think we could probably do a retake on this.
I reckon they probably gave him a shot behind the scenes and said, you know, best make sure, because it would have looked bad for Sega. And as I say, given that until this episode, I'd never contemplated the whole permissions to have games thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what else was going on there?
Exactly, because we have got a games playing legend, Sega European games playing champion, Danny Curley.
Now, tell us, how did you become Sega European champion?
Well, Sega sponsored a big national tour and held heats in every city of the country. So I just entered and I won the heats, which sent me to the final.
Now, you must practice a lot. How many hours a day do you spend playing games?
Well, recently it's been 10 hours a day because I've got a job at Tatex Software Company where they program computer games as a game tester.
Oh, brilliant. That must be the perfect job for you then.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, he won the title in a big old competition of who could get through the first level of Sonic the Hedgehog the quickest.
Mm.
Much like Big Boy Barry launched his gaming career, he later went on to be a QA tester for US Gold, which I think of as less of a job and more of a punishment given some of the games they turned up.
Yeah, he talks about that in his interview where he said that Sega sponsored this national tour with heats in every city, and he won those heats to get to the final, and now he spends 10 hours a day playing games because he's a games tester.
I did a bit of Googling for old Danny just to see what he was up to, what I could find out. Couldn't find much of him now, other than he apparently lived in London for quite a while, may still be around, obviously worked for US Gold, so and such. Found a thread on the Eurogamer website asking if anyone knew what happened to him. And the Eurogame moderator said that he performs sexual acts for heroin, or more colloquially...
sucks off tramps for skag.
Danny found this.
Did he? Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you read down... Danny found this. Not only did he find it, he denied it vehemently, saying it was actually for cocaine.
This wouldn't be the last time that Danny and Dominic worked together. Not only do we get Danny returning in Series 2 for his, I think they call it the Curly Challenge, but he and Dominic Diamond made a VHS tape together that was called Power Play, released in 1993, which essentially was How to Be Good at Video Games.
Power Play will demonstrate a whole range of video games playing skills. Now, note I use the word skills, not cheats. Cheats are sad, they're tragic. In fact, if you need to use cheats, you're probably the type of person whose lips move when they read. You will find no cheats on this video. What you will find is real, genuine skill, which will teach you. To do this, Danny Curley will pass on the benefits of his years of legendary games playing prowess. We'll sit together in a cosy, chummy conversation type situation, and we'll start with the basics. Proper joystick technique. Real button bashing. Screen positioning. And weapons technique.
Wow.
Yeah, Dominic Diamond.
See, from the title, I was thinking this sounds like this is where all the wank jokes are coming from. This is the dark project.
No, it's all up on YouTube. You can go and find it. Yeah, Power Play 1993. It's Dominic Diamond hosting, and he essentially defers to Danny on how you can play certain games and how you can get good at certain games. So I'm thinking, when we get to the point when that's released, we should do a bonus episode.
Absolutely.
Reviewing Power Play. It's a 45-minute video.
Definitely.
I think we're gonna be wicked.
I reckon we can have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
My first note, once we actually get into the challenge... other than just noticing that I wrote Sonic T. Bedgebog. This is the dangers of making notes on the overground.
That sounds like Shinobi trying to get around some licensing issues.
But my first note on the actual challenge is, for someone who's never seen this game before today, Danny is remarkably on top of shit. I mean, he does use the dog once.
He does.
The dog is one of the things this game is most fondly remembered for.
I actually thought your first note was going to be the same as mine, which is that Neil West is not wearing his hat.
I blanked on the fact it was Neil West because he wasn't wearing his hat.
That's right, exactly. I thought it was someone new until they said Neil. I was like, where's your hat, Neil? Yeah, I've written here, I already called BS that he's never played this game before because he knew those rocks were going to fall from the sky. But he makes it through and he rescues the hostages very competently. He's also playing that pad like it's an arcade.
I was very happy to watch that because that position that he's doing there... that's my Street Fighter position.
Yes.
The grip with the left, crab hand with the right.
Yeah.
That's the best way to play Street Fighter on a six-button array, which mirrors the Mega Drive's three buttons, where you have the three and three, like the six-button Mega Drive pad, and like some of the best fight pads available for modern consoles.
Yeah. He gets to the final boss, well, the boss of this level, uses his magic, like Neil suggests, and kills the baddie. It's a very, very quick challenge. Like, he flies through this.
Even if he only saw the game, say, the day of recording... it's a blinder of a run. And he's going so quickly that essentially the pundits are still offering advice or commentary when it's like, oh, and he's coming up to the... He's done it. Yeah, he didn't waste any time. He saved the magic, which was a super smart move.
Yeah, yeah.
He made short work of it.
Now, Danny, that was absolutely staggering. I know you're a European champion, but even still, you just breezed through that. Were you worried at all?
Yeah, a bit at first.
What were some of the most difficult things to overcome in the game?
The rocks. Yeah.
Yeah, they did sneak up on you pretty craftily there. Well, Curly, you're a legend already, but you have won the prize that even legends dream of, the Golden Games Master joystick.
Yeah, Dominic Diamond said that he breezed through the challenge. And Danny just says that the rocks were really the only thing that was a challenge to him.
I imagine even if, say, okay, so let's say he had half an hour to play it before recording. Even getting to know where the rocks are, the exact timing... I'd say that when he, even though he dodged the rocks, he wasn't 100% confident. There was a little bit of hesitation. Yeah.
It's not like watching a speedrunner now who knows like exactly at what time things are going to fall.
So that sterling effort brings tonight's show to a climax. It's lemon verbena for me. And join us in 7 days for another Games Master. Good night.
But even legends dream of winning the Games Master Golden Joystick, and Danny has won himself one, as the Dominic Diamond is putting on his smoking jacket and having himself a lemon verbena. And that's going to do us for this week.
Lemon verbena?
Mm.
I thought you said lemon ribena. I was really getting into it. I loved ribena. I was just like, I remember different flavours of ribena. I don't remember lemon ribena. That must be a regional thing.
It's only available in Scotland.
Only available, yeah. Scotland or churches.
Yeah. So that was this week's episode. What'd you make of it?
Three challenges, three golden joysticks. It was a satisfying episode.
Yeah.
I'd say all the challenges were fun.
Yeah.
They were good. They were good challenges. The review section, while I wasn't overly enamoured with some of them, seeing something like Madden 92 and seeing people love it so much, that was great. Even taking into account the possible sources of those kickoff goals, they were great goals. Some interesting games in the consultation zone. Nice to see the original Metal Gear in there, even if it is the weird NES version. No, I'm very happy with this episode. I actually think that from start to finish, it's probably one of the most consistent episodes.
It was a breeze to watch.
It was very easy to watch. I think I'm going to go high with this one.
Ooh.
I think I'm going to go to 90.
God, big 90.
They found their stride.
Yeah.
Even though they shot a lot of these segments out of order and pieced together the episodes afterward, which is why Dominic Diamond is wearing the same outfit in every single episode, everything just clicks together. The first challenge could have wobbled a bit. But Dominic brings it back around at the end by essentially going to the dad, nah, sod off. The kid's getting the joystick. Barry McGuigan, an absolute joy.
Yeah, he was good.
Any other episode, he would have lit the place up. This episode, he just keeps the mood going, keeps it happy. Brilliant challenge at the end. Yeah, just really nice and comfortable throughout. Everyone feels like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, completely. Which is such a shame as we're ending next week.
Yeah, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Takes the time to find its feet.
I agree with you. I thought this was a really strong, consistent episode. I'm going to go slightly up. I was going to go to 88, only because while I really enjoyed Barry McGuigan, I did not enjoy the challenge as much because it was just smashing some buttons and some people fell down. I was less enthused by it, but I thought he
was like maybe you wouldn't have minded a boxing game. You might have liked one with a bit more blocking and tactics.
That's exactly it. Yeah, because I always look at Super Punch Out as like that's my gold standard of boxing games. So I'm going to go 88% on this one. Thoroughly enjoyed the episode.
I think if we take the average of 89, I think that's probably still the highest rated episode on a median.
Yeah,
so far.
I was going to say I think out. Maybe episode one had a really high score. We should have written these down, to be honest. I mean, we've got them now. They're written in notes, but we're too lazy to go and check our own notes. Well, we're going to put on our smoking jackets and have ourselves some lemon ribena. And we'll see you all in 7 days.
I tell you what, you get the ribena. I'll get the ribena. Compare and contrast. Take care.
Now for that information about the Under Consultation Club. You can follow us on Twitter at UnderConsultPod, and you can send your thoughts on each episode to feedback@underconsultation.com. You can also follow your hosts on Twitter at ThisIsLukeOwen and at AshVersus. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a subscribe and a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The
world's best converting checkout.
Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.